If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
This is one of those trophy assets. This bad boy, when it's done, will be worth $115 million completed. Not even leased up, because the asset will gain value when it's leased up. This is just to put into it, just to buy it, just to fix it, you know?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Augustino helps people build financial freedom through multifamily real estate and leverage their unique core competencies to achieve success. If you are feeling stuck with your real estate portfolio or unsure of how to start, Augustino will lead you to clarity, focus, and action. Hey, Augustino, welcome to the show.
Man, thanks for inviting me. I'm pumped up to be here, man.
Absolutely. This is great. You've done a lot of things in your real estate investing career, and I can't wait to dig in and really just hear, you know, that story. And then the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Can you share with us where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Absolutely. Well, you know, hey, I grew up in Canada. I grew up to a couple of immigrants from Italy. And since I was like 9, 10 years old, I've been an entrepreneur. I wanted to have my own thing. And I chose that thing to be technology at the time. Mm. And my parents, though, they were like, you know what? You don't want to be an entrepreneur. That's very, very high risk. You need to work somewhere. You need to get a job. And they instilled that into my head, right? And you have that plus media plus all this stuff. What happens? I ended up working for a company, right? And then go from company to company to company. And I think what typically happens to people that work at, end up working in corporate America is their self-worth is defined by whatever company they're working at.
Sure.
And I was the same way, you know? And now I did fairly well, you know, I rose to the ranks and eventually became the CIO of some company, a chief information officer, running these multi-million dollar budgets and having, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 people working for me. And I was you know, top of my game, right? And we're talking like, you know, 13, 14, 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that. And regardless, though, from the time I was a kid, where I tried different entrepreneurial ventures from when I was 10 years old with my little computer development software company thing that I was trying to do, all the way to that C-level executive role, I'd been fired so many times because I was never a really good employee.
Mm.
And so here I am, top of the game, working at this publicly traded company with just big budgets and a lot of people. And I was scared to death. Every single day, I was scared to death, man. I was always scared that someone's going to fire me. That's it, right? Because up until that point, I've probably been fired like 8 times. For a variety of different reasons. Usually it's because I work at, I did not guide my career properly, right? And it's all my fault. I'm not blaming them as much as I blame myself, right? And part of it is again, that fear is instilled in you. Just get a job, anything, doesn't matter, right? And that's the way I ran my career, which is totally incorrect. But anyway, I figured out though, that because I was so afraid, I'm like, you know, a friend of mine told me about doing single families. I'm like, you know, if I can get enough of these single families, I can just go ahead and buy like a bunch of these single family homes. And if something happens to me, I can just rely on this income. I mean, that's correct, but it's not the right way to think. You know, it's faulty thinking, right? But regardless, I decided to go down that route, started buying single families, small multifamily, that kind of thing. And eventually that day comes, right? They hand you the box, you know, the GTFO box. Here's your box, pack up your stuff, get lost. We're changing direction and you're out the door, right? As anticipated. So when that happened, that led me down to 10 dark years, right? And in those 10 dark years, a lot of bad things happened to me in my life. Fortunately, I didn't lose any real estate, any of the real estate that I'd bought at that point. And it wasn't a huge portfolio, but it was enough. Every once in a while, I get a drip, you know, and this is during 2008 when things, the whole bottom fell out of the economy. But in that time, learned a lot about myself and what I really needed to really reconsider. And after getting fired again, almost 8, 9 years later from that fateful time, doing this anymore. I'm not going to go work for some company. I'm going to focus on real estate. And that's when a buddy of mine told me about syndication, commercial real estate. And I decided I'm just going to go all in on that. I'm selling everything just to do commercial multifamily real estate. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I had a whole bunch of these single families, got rid of them all. I actually have one house left in Virginia, and decided to just go all in. And when I did that, it was a little bit scary, you know, because I think what happens to most of us out there is that we rely on that weekly paycheck or biweekly paycheck. It's almost like a drug, you know, it's essentially what it is. You're always waiting. You're always like, you're jonesing for that Friday. Oh my God, I get paid, you know, and you're living for the weekends and all that stuff. All that stuff goes away, right? All that stuff goes away when you're an entrepreneur. And what ended up happening was I decided to research where I was going to move to, right? And I decided Cleveland, Ohio. It was still somewhat and this is back 2007 or 2017, you know, or late 2017, 18, early 18. It was still pretty much in a recession where the rest of the country was doing very well, there was an upswing. So I decided to move to Cleveland. I actually moved from Virginia to Cleveland. You know, since then, I've been focused on building and buying a portfolio of commercial real estate. Primarily, it's been multifamily. We have about 1,000 units right now. But now we're also doing development. We're doing redevelopment of historical assets. We're doing ground-up development. We're getting into that business as well, triple net leasing. And believe it or not, we're jumping back into the single family space too. So there's a lot of stuff going on, keeping a lot of people busy. But, you know, the commercial real estate by far is the most exciting stuff. That is really where you get the biggest bang for your buck. We love commercial real estate. It's just a matter of just buying the right stuff for the right price. A lot of people overpaying for stuff these days, in my opinion. And that's the short version of my long story. So there you go.
No, I love that. I love that. I think you hit something on the head. We'll come back to this maybe in a little bit, where you said buying the right stuff at the right price. And, you know, that's something somebody said the other day. They said, well, what's, you know, they're talking about markets, maybe markets, if we're going into a recession and prices are falling and, you know, people are fleeing from an asset, they're like, at what point do you know when to buy? Well, when the price is right relative to the amount of income it's producing. So, I mean, if you're still finding those assets today, then when's the right time to buy? Well, now's the right time to buy. So good for you guys for having your focus on, you know, many, many different asset classes and seeing those opportunities that they present themselves. Tell me this. So if I get the timeline on your story right, you know, you were let go from that job in what year was that?
So that was probably 2007, something like that. It was probably just before the crash, actually. So it would have been, the crash was in October of 8, actually. So it was probably like, no, it was actually in 8, because I remember one of these properties, I was in the middle of buying it. I was trying to buy it. And the bank was giving me all kinds of static and all kinds of problems. They wanted all kinds of paperwork. And I'm like, why are they asking me for all this stuff? It's never been a problem before. Right. And I think the wheels are about to fall off in 2008. So it was probably like mid-2008.
Right. Okay. And then you said you went through 10 dark years.
Yeah.
Right. And so at what point in time did you really double down on real estate? When did you begin this journey you're on now of really expanding your scope and what you invest in?
So it would have been like 18. Yeah, it would have been like late 17, early 18. And at that point, I'd just been fired from another job. I was living in Indianapolis. And the guy who hired me left the company. He was the president of the company. He left the company. New guy comes in. He wants to bring in his own people. I'm out the door, right? So here I am. I go back to Virginia because I still have properties out there. So I was going to go keep an eye on them and try to liquidate them, right? And then I'm looking out the car window one day. And I see this building. It's like this little 28-unit deal or something. And I look at it. I just happened to be talking to a real estate attorney friend of mine. And I said, hey, man, who owns that? Like, who owns these buildings? And he's like, what do you mean? People own them. I go, what people? Who are these people? You mean banks? He goes, no, individuals. They syndicate them. I'm like, syndication? What's syndication? And then he explained all of it to me. And I'm like, oh my God, I could do that. I can raise money from other people and give them a nice return. I can certainly do that. You know, I wasn't really, and I understood the big numbers. You know, the big numbers didn't scare me. It was a very big revelation. But once I heard what it was and how to do it, that's the key thing right there is deciding, making the decision to change your entire life, right? And at that point, though, I committed to studying and training and refocusing my entire life away from technology, which is what I've been doing, and going all in on real estate. I must have studied, eight or nine different training programs on everything from single family to multifamily, anything I could find on the internet. And it's funny because I didn't know about all these gurus that you see today. Today, there's tons of gurus, a guru for everything, it seems.
Right.
But back then, I didn't see any, maybe because, I wasn't really focused on it. So I was listening to guys like Robert Kiyosaki, Carlton Sheets, Carl went down to the library, found the Carlton Sheets, listening to all that stuff. And it was crazy, man. I mean, I started studying how to do deals, right? And from morning till night, I mean, I committed 100%. Because I wasn't working, I couldn't do that, I'm not going to say it was easy. It was very, very hard, and even a little scary but I think that once you make that commitment, to really hunkering down and becoming that person that you want to become, then anything is possible. And I decided at that point, I will be a real estate entrepreneur. I will have X number of assets in this amount of time producing this type of revenue every year. I decided it. And once I made that decision, then I worked my way backwards to figuring out what work I have to do today to hit that goal tomorrow, right? I still do things the same way. My team and I still do things exactly the same way.
Right. So you pick your goal and then figure out what it takes to get there. That sounds like a lot of mindset. Like for you, one, believing that you can, first of all, because there's always voices, I think, in all of our heads, no matter how big we become or how great or how many great things we've done, there's always that little voice of self-doubt, or maybe it's a big screaming voice of self-doubt that says, I can't. So one, you believed you could, and then secondly, just making a roadmap. Like, how do you, if you live in Cleveland, well, how do you get to Los Angeles? All right, well, Los Angeles is the goal. Now we just got to figure out which roads to take to get there.
Yeah.
So good for you for figuring that stuff out. What does your business, I know you said you guys are investing in a lot of different asset classes, but let's fast forward now, I guess just pushing maybe 3 years time. So 36 months later, approximately, give or take a few months, what does your business look like today? Yeah, we'll start there. I'm not going to go any deeper than that. Let's start right there.
Sure. So primarily, we focused on B and C class assets in and around Cleveland. That's it. That's all we're doing right now. So that means what? Buying your older properties, 60s, 70s vintage, right? C class assets and some B class. We always pick those up, typically greater than 100 units. If there's a value add component, we like those too. But it's everything from garden style type of apartment setup to towers. And then we own like four or five towers. So that was one asset class, if you call it B and C's, is one multifamily asset class that we've been really focused on. And then more recently, since we bought the Rockefeller building in downtown Cleveland. Now, John D. Rockefeller was the richest man on the planet. I think if he were still alive today, he would still be the richest man on the planet. And this was his headquarters here in Cleveland before he moved to New York City. So we bought that building. We're converting it to multifamily. It's going to be 436 units thereabouts, multifamily units in there, two floors of office, and the whole bottom level is going to be like food and retail and stuff like that. So it's going to be a very, very exciting project for us. So we got that cooking. And then we have other ground up development as well that we're doing, and triple net as well, right? So again, taking that same thing we're just talking about, what does the future look like and how do you pull it all the way back to today, right? Well, the future, my real estate investment trust, and offer this product to individuals that might be listening right now for, they invest X amount of money, we'll give them Y amount back, right? And to do that consistently, you have to really diversify your returns across multiple asset classes, because you know what? Multifamily is doing great today. It may dip in the future. It could happen, right? But that's why I have multiple asset classes, because redevelopment is still going to just still play in there. And A-class assets perform very different than B and C class. Triple net, single tenant triple net performs very, very differently than the other asset classes. So by spreading your so-called risk across all these asset classes, you're able to get a very predictable return, that's it. You know, that's all we're doing, right? So, but it's just like I said, you know, you figure out what you want to be in 5 years and pull it all the way back to today and figure out what you need to do today to be there in 5 years, right? Yeah, that's how we do it.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. What are some things that you look back, even, I mean, in 36 months, you guys have had really exponential growth. And I think that's to be applauded. What are some things in the last 36 months that you said could have even shortened that timeline more?
Oh man, I'll tell you what. I think that this, with 2020 being the disaster that it was, so on my vision board, or my goals, I should say, first I do a vision board and every like late December, a vision board and the goals. And one of my goals for 2020 was to go to at least one live conference every single month. Mm. And well, you know, that didn't really happen for anybody, I don't think.
No.
Right. So the thing is that I should have done more of those conferences early on, because every single time I go to those conferences, there's so much value that you learn, right? And people are always afraid to spend the $200 to $400 to $1,000 to go to a conference. But if they pick up one piece of good information, that one piece of information will give them, it could possibly an infinite number or infinite amount of money back. You know, all you have to hear is one thing about how do you put a deal together for that $1,000 that could save you millions down the road.
For sure.
And I subscribe to that, or I truly do. So there's that. I wish I would have done that sooner. I wish I would have done that sooner for sure. Another thing is that we rely heavily on assistance, on other people to help us build a business. And early on, it's either myself or my wife. We were very hands-on to handle social media stuff.
Right.
And how do I put it? It's good that we know how to do it, but at the same time too, if we would have just known how to figure out how to do it and then hand it off immediately instead of hanging on to it for so long, you know, and focus on what matters. Investor relations matters more than putting up a video on YouTube, right? Things like that, right? So it's a matter of focusing on what matters, you know, and investor relations, for instance, matters, deal flow matters, you know, and maybe that's, it went down the way it did. I mean, I'm not mad about it. All I can do is get better at it and try to accelerate it even faster. You know, now that I figured out where the gaps were, is to do that. And then I guess the third thing would probably be, you know, taking on a mentor, you know, even indirectly taking on a mentor, you know, and that's one thing that you can take on through partnerships, you know, take on a partner, watch and see what they do. And if you're bringing something special to the table, try to partner up with somebody that's 10 years ahead of where you are. And when you do that, see what they do. How do they do things differently than you do? And why do they do it that way? And learn from them. And maybe you can incorporate that in your life, right? That's something that has helped me out tremendously as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah, taking on a mentor, we hear that. You know, obviously, that's one of the things that I think is universal in any business you're in. And somebody put it, I read it yesterday, somebody put it like this, you've got to have somebody that's, you know, watching your swing if you're in sports and going, hey, you know, I mean, even, what do they say, even Tiger Woods has a swing coach or something like that. I don't follow sports. I'm not a sports guy, unfortunately. don't hate me for it. I don't know anything about them. But I understand the concept. Like, you can't review your swing yourself. Like, you've got to have somebody else that's looking at it going, hey, you know, maybe do this slightly differently. And then those can be the game changers. So that's really cool that, you know, you figured that out and said, hey, I took on a mentor. I love the idea of going to conferences. That's always a tough one. I think you're absolutely right. A lot of us will look at these things and go, gosh, $1,000, $1,500, which now that we can't have them, those questions are no longer there. It's like, heck yeah, I'd pay $2,500 to go to a conference in person right now. You betcha, man. Like, cause that's the stuff that we're missing, you know, cause those were relationships are formed. And I mean, that's, that's something I can't wait to get back to actually doing that. What were some of the first people that you hired or brought on? Like, what was some of that? What did that look like?
Well, you know, it's who you bring on the team when you're first starting off from zero, for instance, is absolutely critical to building credibility that you need for brokers and for other people you're going to be dealing with. If you don't have a team, if you're going in by yourself and you're totally inexperienced, you're going to look like a fool. And I mean that with the most amount of love I can possibly convey. All right.
It's fair. Shoot straight, man. We're not here. We're not here to preserve feelings. We're here to get actionable intelligence. So.
Right. And but you know what though? One of the first person that I hired or I brought on I brought on the team was a property manager. Hmm. Right. The property manager. And this is actually tough to do. You know, the property manager when you're starting at from zero, for instance, you really got to know what you're saying and how to say it. You got to sound confident. You got to sound like you know what you're saying and know what you're doing. And you have to be able to speak with authority. And for many people that are unable to pull this thing off, they'll be like, well, you know, I want to really get to 500 units one day. You can't go in like that. You have to sound like you know what you're talking about. You're very confident and you're driven and motivated to anybody, not just a property manager, to anybody, right? If you're a timid person, you're going to have to somehow build up that confidence that you need to really demonstrate you know what you're talking about. And that's absolutely critical in doing that, right?
Right.
Then once you bring on the property manager, if you're able to bring them on, a good property manager, not from a giant company, it's the last thing you need, in my opinion, mid-tier companies, okay? They can actually line you up with other brokers, with other owners, maybe, you know, they're usually the ones that are the gatekeepers between vendors, between contractors, inspectors, because they're the ones that are handling all this stuff, right? So a good property manager is always the place to start. Then you get a really, really good real estate attorney, like preferably a mover and a shaker, someone that can help negotiate with the other side at some point. So you want someone that's smart and not be a slime ball either. I mean, there's real estate attorneys. Oh my God, man. I've had this one real estate attorney that we were buying a deal from, and the other side, this lady was not really nice. She was very mean to us. I don't know why she was like this, but she was very, very mean. And someone had said, hey, down the road, like a couple of years later, hey, this lady is available if you want to hire her. Like, are you kidding me? I would not put my buyer through the hell that this lady put us through. I wouldn't want her to represent me.
Right.
Things like that are important, you know, because it's a very small world. And if your attorney is going to be a jerk to other people, or your vendor in general, if they're going to be a jerk to other people, then you don't want those people on your team, mm-hmm. right? So it's a two-way street, right? And then, you know, I guess you learn that from experience. You know, it's very hard to convey, right? That's why, like, in my coaching program, when I take people on, I plug them directly into my team. You know, my team, I've been working with these people for years, the same people. They watch us expand and grow tremendously. So it's, you know, there's no surprises with these guys, you know, no surprises at all.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's good. That's excellent. Actually, actual information. That's excellent. I want to circle back before we run out of time, because curiosity, just, I can't help it. I want to talk a little bit more about the Rockefeller building.
Yeah.
So that sounds like, and this is kind of, would you classify this as a pinnacle project for you?
You know, it's funny. My partner, he sent me a text yesterday, last night. He's out of Texas. He was at the bookstore. And he sees this old book, or this book, not old book, this book. And it says something like, I think it's at Borders or something like that, like Cleveland Landmarks. And he flips through the pages, and there's our building.
That's awesome.
There's our building, right? It's the Rockefeller building, right? There it is. It's a historical landmark, which it is. It's on the National Historical Registry, right? Yeah, this is a pinnacle. It's usually referred to as a trophy asset. Yeah, right. This is one of those trophy assets. This bad boy, when it's done, be worth $115 million completed, not even leased up, because the asset will gain value when it's leased up. This is just to put into it, just to buy it, just to fix it, you know? So yeah, it's very, very exciting. Very exciting. So that deal itself is indeed a trophy asset. And my response to that text message was, we need more trophy assets. We need more trophy assets. And I can tell you the whole story about how we bought it. It is certainly a very interesting story. I don't know if we have enough time for all that. It's a long story, but it's certainly a lot of learning experience in there. That's for sure. Just because over the past 25 years, all right, there's been over 100 offers made on this deal. I swear I'm not exaggerating. The only reason why I know that is because other brokers, they come out of the woodwork and they're like, how did you pull that off? And because they were working a lot of the times, they're working with these different people. And these other people that came in here to try to buy that asset, I mean, they weren't slouches. I mean, they knew what they were doing, right? Wow. But here we are, a couple of guys just, you know, bought the property. I'm not going to say it was easy, but there's certainly a lot of learning experiences. That's good. That could be good for another show, I think.
It could be. Do you have two quick things? And I know we're out of time and I'm so sorry, but two quick things were the secret sauce. Like, what got you, you know, across the finish line when others couldn't?
Yeah, I would say that number one, do what you say you're going to do. Always, always do what you say you're going to do. Hey, you know what? I'll have this agreement out to you tomorrow. And damn it, have it out tomorrow. Don't make any excuses. You'd be surprised how many people came and followed simple directions like that. If you say you're going to do something, if you promise you're going to do something, do it. And then second, I would say be easy to work with. Mm-hmm. Be super easy to work with, right? Be easy to work with the brokers. Be easy to work with the attorneys. Be easy to work with everybody. Don't be difficult. There's a lot of people in this business that believe you have to be a hard-nosed jerk to everybody. And it's totally not the case at all. I don't know where that comes from. I don't get it, right? But you really need to be a good person, right? And you really need to be easy to work with. Because when you're easy to work with, as soon as that broker down the road keeps getting deals, they want to get paid. Well, they want to get paid. they want to get paid easily.
Right.
Easy. Just be easy to work with. And you'd be surprised how many people think that you have to be a hard-nosed guy. I'm going to bang on the table with my fist. I'm going to say what I want. Rah! You know, no, don't do that. That's stupid. My opinion. That's my opinion anyway. Everything that I'm telling you has been working fine for me. So.
Right. You're literally 1 in 100. So, you know, we'll listen. So that's great. Let's jump here into the final four if we can.
Yeah.
What is one piece of advice? Maybe you just gave it. I don't know. But what's one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
You know, I would say focus on the bulletproof trifecta. And that's going to be make sure you define your mindset up front. Make sure that you practice your chops on sales and marketing and capital raising. And of course, always keep your knowledge sharp with real estate. Don't just, if you're going to focus on a multifamily, that's fine. You should also know about self-storage. You should know about land. You should know about redevelopment. You should know about all these things. You have to be an expert at those other things. Just know something about it, because inevitably you will be going to some sort of presentation or some sort of meetup somewhere. And you're going to talk to some of these other folks. And you want to keep your mind open for opportunity to help someone else. So that's the only way you know that, or the only way you're able to do that, is if you know what they're talking about. So that's it.
Awesome. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
That I currently do? I listen to a book a week. So back in the end of December, right, I would define my entire book list for the whole year. Mm-hmm. I download them all. They're all on my phone. So that way I'm listening to a book a week, and it's usually on sales or psychology, nothing really with real estate. I get other news for that. But it's really to do sales and mindset and capital raising. That's what I do.
Gotcha. Do you share your reading list with anyone?
You know, I do. If you go to bulletproofcashflow.com, a little pop-up will show up. If you put your email address in there, it'll email you a couple of free ebooks, ebooks on raising capital, ebook on how to talk to brokers. And I believe one of those lists is also the Bulletproof book club list as well. So yeah, definitely check that out.
Okay. No, that's cool. I might actually do that. I'm always looking for more reads and want to see what other people are reading, because, you know, you can't stay on top of everything that's coming out. So that's awesome. If you're reading 52 a year, that's a lot.
Well, but I'll tell you what, it's also what it is you're reading too. There's a lot of garbage out there, tons of garbage out there. And if you're going to read something, you're going to spend the amount of time that you have. It's a finite that we have on this planet. Don't waste it reading dumb crap. No, read the best in the business. Read the best, the best authors you possibly can. Very important.
Love that. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Hey, listen, you know what? One of the things that we do is when we buy these assets, we make sure these assets are put together very, very well. We have a great team that's there, you know? So we provide great housing. We're not slumlords by any stretch. We treat our people, our tenants very, very well. And I mean, that's just one thing. And on Christmas, we'll do something special for them as well. Different holidays, we'll do something special for them. But we're really, really focused on trying to make the best home we possibly can for our tenants and residents. That's what we do.
That's awesome. I think you already said it, but just to make sure we capture it here, the final question is, how do our listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, bulletproofcashflow.com. It's one way. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. You know, always looking to friend people. Go ahead, shoot me a friend request. I was looking to connect, especially on LinkedIn. Then, of course, we also have the Facebook group as well. It's a private group. So if anybody's interested in becoming bulletproof, go ahead and do that.
Awesome. Augustino, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
You bet, man. You bet. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.